In fact, tomorrow,
everybody know I'm next.
I don't even like to say it because we're arrested.
I be riding in a Rari, ooh. I be popping hella Molly, yeah. Dirty Brady said a lobby, 5 bitches on me, give me sloppy toppy, ooh. Everybody wanna be me, ooh. Ice water as a Fiji, yeah. Ice water as a Kiwi, ooh.
We need to go into the
like a chef, ooh. Taking off in the jet, ooh. Everybody know I flex, ooh. Everybody know I'm next, ooh. Everybody know I'm next, ooh. 100,000 on my neck, ooh. I be running up a jet, ooh. I be fucking on your ex, ooh. Everybody know I'm next, ooh. Everybody know I'm next, ooh.
Hey, it's Jose Galison. You're watching No Way Jose. You can find me on No Way Jose YouTube channel, all the major audio podcatchers, and Odyssey as well. Today, you know what, for my guests, I'll do this a little quickly, a little lead in. I don't know if you guys, I have a little bit new backdrop items. I mean, this won't work so well if you're doing audio, but I guess I'll try to explain if you're doing audio. Let's first start off with up here. I got two things, both are Top Lobster related. That Top Lobster just got for me recently at a, I just put these up, new backdrop items. This right here, Top Lobster got me his Action Comics number one, the first, you know, Superman appearance. So kind of a big deal for any comic book nerds, but Top Lobster got me that. And then off over here, here's my favorite, where my fingers are going. Off over here, that corner there, that little piece of paper there, that is my favorite comic book panel of all time. It's from Invincible. I forget what specific volume. It's actually a really fucking dope storyline. It's where he gets in a fight. I forget the name of the character, but he gets in a fight. He's getting his ass handed to him. So literally, guy's arms are basically ripped apart. And then something happens where his like wife, who's like, or not wife, but his girlfriend and the mother of his child at the time, or about to be the mother of his child, gets in danger and ends up like beating the guy to death with his head because his hands aren't even, basically doesn't even have hands. It's a gnarly story. I highly suggest for anyone who wants to get into comics, check out Invincible. And the last new thing I'm adding, if you guys can see right there, right here, that might look familiar for some. That's a little lectern. It's a little lectern. There was this thing not too long ago that I'm not entirely sure if we're allowed to talk about it on YouTube anymore, but there's a certain individual who went to this certain super duper important building, I guess it's super sacred or something like that, and he decided to take a podium and do little funnies, take some pictures with it, and you know, now he's a guest on my show. He just so happened to he kind of lives somewhat nearby. We've hung out already now. We're kind of best buddies now, I think. So it's only fair to bring him on the show. But yeah, I have the lectern guy. I don't know if I'm supposed to give his first name. I'll let him give that or his real name. He can say that when he comes on a second. I don't want to dox him. I'm not entirely sure. He's already been doxed by a million people already, so it doesn't really matter. But I don't know. Just being fair. But I do want to remind you guys. Oh, and let you guys know that intro. That intro came from my buddy Tim Tuttle on Twitter, so go check him out. Go follow him. But I do want to give you guys the rigmarole real quick, the rundown. I do remind you guys, I recently had my piece in Garrison Magazine, piece on Kenneth Trenadu, so go check that out. I will try to remember to put that in the video description, so you guys that want that can go get that magazine. Got my work published in there, so that's fucking dope. That's something. But it this right here is a paywall thing. This isn't a live stream. This isn't a 4.0. It's just me and old lectern buddy. So how these work is about roughly a week or so early, I'll do a little live stream for my patrons, and they'll go public later. So if you want to have access to it earlier, you need to be a patron at patreon.com. It's NoWayJose2020. Lowest level is $2. Highest level is $22 is what gets you that early stuff. So, I mean, the other stuff is all just, you know, icing on top of that. Just the $2 that you really need. If you want to give me more, I'm all for it. I love money. So, but yeah, $2. Patreon.com. It's NoWayJose2020 is my sponsors. And so, as such, I read them off every episode. I have Mikkel Thorpe of the Expat Money Show. I have Jeremy, who's an Etsy store, etsy.com/shop/raisingliberty. Follow him on Twitter at Jeremy Rhymes. And also my co-host of Tower Gang, Toad. You know, you can go check out Tower Gang on Spotify, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, all the other audio podcatchers. It's my offensive comedy podcast that me, Toad, and some others do. Highly recommend it if that's your shtick. I mean, obviously, you recommend it. I'm in it. But follow Toad at Tower Gang Toad. Zach Overacker at Zoveracker on Twitter. Mike Degalash. And lastly, Lindsay, or that Hangry Mama on TikTok. Hangry with an H. Go check out her content on TikTok. She's doing OKC content, which is pretty dope. Because I'm glad that's you know, getting over on TikTok, because it's not really something I want to do, but I'm glad she's doing it. Yeah, also toplobs.com, use Jose at checkout. That's where you can get my Yeeky shirt at and all my other merch, and also other stuff Top Lobs does, other different shows merch, other, you know, non-show related artwork. Definitely go check it out. With that, let's get Lectern dude in here. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up? What, should I just keep calling you Lectern dude, or what do you want to be? I know your real name, but I was like, when I was typing up this stream, this, like, making the link for this, I was like, shit, I don't know if he wants me to use his name or not.
you can call me Adam dude. It's fine. I've been doxxed, you know, for almost 2.5 years now. People know where I live, what I do, and where my kids go to school and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a wild world we live in. But I guess we can just go ahead and get right into it. For those who, it's funny, when I got this award, I actually started telling some of my normal friends, like my normie friends with us, because I just, like, for me, that was like, I actually legitimately was really psyched about it, because it was just like, for me, I'm like, getting that little award thing. I guess I didn't explain what I got the award for in the little intro bit. I got it from you, but I didn't explain what for. And I guess we'll get into that a little bit, but it was so cool to me, so surreal, because I was like, for me, I'm like a political nerd. I follow this stuff. I'm like, I could totally see my grandkids, like, one day be like, oh, be looking at history books and see, like, a picture of you in it or something. You know what I mean? So for me, I was like, I know you're, like, not like a major historical figure, but I know, like, enough to be like, oh, that could totally be a picture in a history book. And so for me, I was like, I just know, like, one day my grandkids could be looking at it and be like, hey, that guy gave me a little award. They'd be like, shut up, grandpa. it was surreal for me. And I tell all my normie friends, and they're like, it's surprisingly, like, I had to explain, do a lot of exposition for most people. It was like, for me, I'm like, boom, did my head immediately. Somebody's an Lectern guy or the QAnon shaman. One of those, mm-hmm. Like, for me, you two are guys are like the figure, like the, like, in the
poster boys.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, it just blew my mind, but it still is, like, super surreal, super cool. But it's just kind of funny that there are a lot of people who surprisingly don't know. I guess maybe I just underestimate how niche some of my political interests can be sometimes, even something as big as January 6th. That's how little people actually pay attention. You can say Lectern guy, they'd be like, what?
Yeah.
But like, whereas if you actually looked into January 6th at all, regardless of which side you fall on it, if I was like Lectern guy, you'd be like, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's also kind of a testament to how many people do get grinded by the system that we're just unaware of.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There's something to that for sure. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know. It really did kind of blow my mind, because it's one of those things where I'm like, I mean, I've had this thing happen quite a bit, doing what I do, doing something that's, like, so niche, and I'm not at all someone who's like, I wouldn't say I'm, like, successful, I guess, in a sense. I've done decent for myself with what I've done. It's not like I'm, like, definitely not doing full time for this thing, but I've had some cool stuff. I've had been on with Dave Smith, who was, like, someone who I follow this content for a long period of time. I've gone on Tim Pool. It's just like, I've had some cool moments, and I tell, like, normal people, and I tell them these things, and they're like, they don't even know. And I just, for once, I guess with this one, I was like, oh, my normie friends will be like, oh, what? I mean, they'll probably be like, look at me like, why are you so excited about being on the Lectern guy, or getting that from the Lectern guy from January 6th? But I was so disappointed. I was expecting people to, because I knew the other stuff, I just keep those deep inside. If I tell my normal friend I'm going on Tim Pool, they're like, who? I'm like, well, remember that, like, one Joe Rogan episode with him and, like,
exactly
Twitter guys forever ago? Like, you might know him from that. Like, aside from that, like, I don't watch that. Like, it is weird how niche some of these things are sometimes, but it is just funny that, like, I don't know. Even you didn't break the mold for normies, I guess, entirely.
Yeah, Well, it's even like, but the same people, I can't keep up with sports stats. I don't really watch sports at all. So I'm lost at those parties where, you know, the guys get together and they're watching football or something. I'm just disinterested, you know? So I think it's just probably that, you know, people just have other focuses.
Yes, but, I know. But at the same time, though, if someone was like LeBron James, I'd be like, oh, I think I kind of know about him. I'm the same boat as you. I'm not like a huge sports guy. Not saying that, I guess, the lectern guy is.
He was in the helicopter, right? Is that him?
You actually, for a second, I was like, got confused. I was like, wait, are you right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm trying to think of a good parallel, but I guess LeBron James would be an awful one because that's a. But, anyways. All right, let's just go ahead and get into what we're kind of dancing around here. I'll give you the chance to kind of give your story. We can go as deep into it, I guess. I mean, it's been long enough since January 6th. I think we might be able to get away with just straight up talking about it on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, like, we could just talk about it, I guess. You know, obviously, it was really bad for the YouTube censors. Super duper duper bad, like really bad. But I think we got that covered, so we can just kind of talk freely now. So, you know, what kind of brought you to show up on January 6th, ready to take over the government?
Oh, well, all right. Not going to take them out to dinner first. That's fine. So it was a culmination of things, right? It's COVID, it's lockdowns, it's, you know, get vaccinated, care about an ID passport if you want to get a burger. We've got mayors saying things like, hey, if you get it, we'll give you donuts. When we know that probably being outside and get exercise is probably one of the best things you can do when you look at comorbidities, and you watch all this insane rhetoric that's happening, and it's not, you know, it's a string of things. It's not just COVID. It is, you know, obviously the election. There were a lot of questions surrounding that I don't think we'll ever get answers for. I don't. It was all of Hollywood coming out 2016 through 2020. It's all of the mainstream media. You could not find an article that was against this guy. And it's not that I'm such an avid Trump supporter, you know, where it's like, I'm going to vote for him no matter what. Has nothing to do with that. What I see is a system frantic. I see a system that's, you know, really just grasping at any straw they can to throw shade at this dude. And I'm like, man, maybe the deep state really is being at least slowed down or hurt. But, you know, my honest opinion is there is no 4-year term or 8-year term that's really going to turn things around. This is a generational thing. It's going to take 30 years of raising a population that actually loves their countries, understands their rights, and wants to protect them. So did vote for him in 16, you know, saw what happened. COVID, you know, all the information is coming out, and 20 showed up, and I'm like, I think I got to vote for this guy because this is the biggest, it almost felt like he was disabling a system, right? Like almost slowing it down. We didn't see any new wars start. We didn't see any new conflicts arise. People just kind of stayed in their countries. Nationalism kind of started to come up again. And it was, I don't know. I felt like we were getting back to the right side of America, like the America that I want to raise my kids in. So these were all factors of showing up that day. Never been to a protest before in my life. It was the first time I've ever voted in 2020. And I showed up to a protest.
That was the first protest you ever showed up to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do want to add to the Trump thing. I do think I feel like I've probably said this on my show before, but I feel like to some way, like him as a person, as a specific individual politician, I definitely think he has a lot of issues, and I have a lot of problems with a lot of things he's done.
Yep.
But like, so far as what he has, the influence he's had on the movement, I actually think has generally been positive. And in a weird way, I feel like it kind of got away from him too, to where it took on a life of its own, to where like there was a period of time, like you've probably seen, where like, where Trump was getting like booed on stage not too long ago
for the vaccines.
Stuff like that. And it's like, those were his people. He lost his base. Like he created a base. He created a certain idea, a certain vibe. And that thing kind of took off without him. So it's like, it's almost like when I'm analyzing that phenomenon, I have to differentiate between Trump, the politician, and the influence he's had, in a sense, because I don't really I like what Trump has been for it, but like so far as an individual politician, I don't care. Like, I mean, I do like some of the energy he's had recently. It's been really cool. Yeah. Obviously, like I think like
we could talk about bump stock bans. Choices.
Yeah, bump stock bans.
We can talk about his gun policy. Not a big fan of it. Like, there's his hiring practices. Like, we can go on and on about all the mistakes that he made. Like, and I can fill a whole interview with this. And I think to your point, like, he did birth something, right? But during 16, Bernie Sanders kind of did the same thing. And they were kind of very juxtaposed to each other, right? Trump is more of the establishment needs to be dismantled. And Bernie was the establishment needs to be built up properly. And I think both parties, you know, that were more center were leaning in that direction, right? So your libertarians and your classical liberals, right? They were both leaning towards like a Sanders and Trump ticket. But if Trump birthed this thing, you know, the goal of any parent is, you know, to get that bird out of your nest to make it fly on its own. And I think that if he did birth this America first, you know, concept, you know, when it may just be, you know, Tea Party 2.0, maybe it's time that we do move forward with it, you know, because I'm not sure if we need 80-year-old presidents. I don't think it's a great idea. You know, I definitely think he has more energy and sass than Biden does. I definitely think he's not, you know, having to change his pants in the Vatican. But I just wonder if it's the right way forward sometimes.
I do think while you were talking, it made me think that I don't even know if we can really attribute a ton of this to Trump. I really feel like he was just kind of what was called for at that moment. Like, that was the energy in the room, and that he was that thing that filled that void at that time. That there was essentially certain incentives have been put into place, and something capitalize on those incentives, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I think what I'm getting at is like at the time that he kind of, I feel like politics had gotten stale, gotten predictable. So it was only made sense that someone bombastic like him came in, an outsider that threw things off. And it's not to say that like he specifically, any of his policies or whatever, or even that it was particularly him. It's that just that outsider outlaw vibe, as Sam Tripoli is known to say, the outlaws. That was kind of what it was, I think, as opposed to any specific policies or person. People got it caught up in like the cult of Trump. And it's like, I don't even think it's like necessarily the cult of Trump. It's more just like that energy that he filled, that that spark he ignited in people to were like, hey, like, you know, look, this thing can be fucked with.
Predictability is a great word for it.
Yes.
Because, I mean, what have we had? We've had the same thing, you know, when I think, God, there's so much to unpack there. I think with the advent of social media, the information we can share so rapidly, we have independent journalism that is just, it is on an exponential growth path right now. And you can literally go read about stories before the mainstream media and the CIA has an opportunity to correct the stories and tell you what to believe. Obama just had an interview, I think a few weeks ago, we were talking about independent media is what's ruining the country. He said we used to have like three stations and that was the news, and we all agreed on the main narrative. And it's like, no, that was the problem. And this, the novelty, right? The predictability of it all is what made people feel like, man, am I the only person taking crazy pills, or am I being lied to on a regular basis? And I think Trump was just that person where it's like, hey, I've got a bunch of money and a big voice and a platform, and I can get through all of these campaign finance laws and actually bid for this thing, and I'll say the thing you want to say. Because at the end of it, he's a narcissist. Like, he loves being loved. He definitely wants the power. These are things that we can definitely admit. But I mean, any studies on politicians, like, narcissism is the key trait they all share. So I won't attribute the one thing to him and not to everyone else.
He was a matrix breaking moment. I think that's kind of what it was. And I think there were other matrix breaking moments occurring at the same time. The kind of that same basic idea, kind of like you brought up, independent media. But it's the idea, as silly as it may sound, it, like, say something with Trump, like the idea of like, people will be like, hey, you people used to think, hey, you can't go up on the debate stage and accuse your political opponent of father of killing JFK. You can't go up on the political stage and tell people, like, allude to the size of your wiener. You can't go on a political stage and call your political opponents to their face wife fat. And it's like, okay, you used to think you can't, but in reality, you can. And it's the same idea with independent media. It's like, okay, we have these established figures churning all these stories, but the other day, like, if you're a little guy, like, it's like, well, what can I do? You can put out a story. You can share this tweet. You could do this. You can do stuff. And it's like this idea of people are like, I think people are kind of like realizing, like, oh, I can just do this shit. And you can, there's actually, you know, the more people start doing shit, the more it like catches on, if that makes sense. You know?
Yeah. Well, campaigns have been putting those commercials out forever, right? It's never the person who's saying it. It's always the commercial on TV, right? And these are these people that are getting funded with your donations to their campaigns, right? But it's never the politician that says it, right? They have to be formal because, you know, you have to have this air about you if you're going to lead a country. And it's, I think that people were like, they wanted someone who just talked like they did, someone they can actually relate to, you know. And maybe we're just tired of polished, maybe we're all really, really, really exhausted, and it's like, look, we're at the end of our conversation, your argument, and we really just want to know, can we reconcile at the end of this, or are we just done arguing? We got to figure out how to move forward.
Yeah. No, it's I think there's some like respectability thing that comes in there, that's, we've broken the mold there. Like, you look at, I mean, hell, anyone who's familiar with like my other show, Tower Gang, and then like some of the breaks I've had, and then now like bring that to like a higher level. Like, look at somebody like Dave Smith, and then look at the other show he has. This other show is Legion of Skanks. And then you look at the breaks, like the places that he's gone, obviously way higher than me, and like the things that he's made happen. Or, you know, created like influence, like his influence has outsized the establishment, and he is not part of this respectability thing. And the same thing to me, like, I know it sounds silly, but I've already in a few episodes now broke down the metrics, or kind of use this example of Tubin, who was an individual who wrote a book on Oklahoma City bombing just recently, who was either still is or currently or previously was an anchor for CNN or a contributor or something like that.
The Zoom guy?
Yeah, Zoom guy.
This was the Zoom guy. Yeah.
Dude has like a quarter of a million followers, and like my little 5,000 follower account, like with my OKC content, whenever I do like OKC tweets, they blow his away. And and we're talking about the difference between me being like, let me tell you about Andrea Strassmeyer in a tweet, and not even like a crazy thread or something, just a quick little factoid. Mm-hmm. And then something like his, like a literal announcement of him going in an appearance on CNN with like Anderson Cooper to promote his book that he spent months on. And I'll get like multiple times more of engagement than him and people caring.
Yes.
So it's like, that is it right there. No one gives a shit. This is like, it's that invincible meme of like people were like look what they have to do to mimic a fraction of our power. Like, exactly. Like all that money you were talking about, those money games they play. Mm-hmm. Like that is like what upholds that. Like, I'm sure there's some CIA cutout that's probably going to pay, you know, Tubin hundreds of thousands of dollars and buy a bunch of books. But it's like, if you look at on the ground engagement, it's kind of like, It's completely artificial.
The engagement's not real. The engagement is from Twitter 1.0. Mm-hmm. All these legacy blue checks that came through, and they're like, oh, I'm super important. And I've even found this on conservative pages, right? Like, I mean, I'm looking at conservative pages that have like north of 100,000 followers. I get more engagement than them. And I haven't broken 10,000 yet. And I don't know if it's real. I don't know if the conservative side of it or the liberal side of it, if it's just been kind of navigated to where, well, we have to have a percentage of conservatives, otherwise we can't attract conservatives to the platform. So let's find some vanilla, you know, milquetoast people that'll just not post too insane things, and we'll kind of go along with the, well, I don't want my Twitter feed, you know, suspended, so we'll let them just exist. But it's a Twitter 1.0 people that don't really have engagement anymore. But I know my following are savages. They are savages. They are on top of everything. They share everything. They comment everywhere. And I've noticed the same thing for your following as well.
Yeah, no, I've definitely been lucky with the following I've built up. But it is just, it's just weird. It's just surreal. Like, if you look at like the outsized influence you can have as just some dude, like Tubin is a guy who's probably making hundreds of thousands of dollars doing what he does. And I make a couple hundred bucks a month off this. So
we should talk about that. But I'm telling you, so I had no idea who you were months ago. And then I saw you posted something about OKC, and I was very apolitical growing up. I got a bunch of kids, started when I was 21 years old. I got five now. So I haven't had time to really understand politics. You know, when I saw 9/11 happen, I was like, oh, we definitely need the TSA and start a 20-year war, you know, and definitely take my rights because I don't know anything, right? So I saw your stuff. And I'm like, man, I think I want to learn more about history, you know, maybe at least history through the lens of people who have actually spent time investigating it. So I started your series, OKC. And at the end of it, I thought to myself, this guy has to have a lectern because what you are doing is speaking for the dead. You are speaking for the martyred. You are speaking for people that the government just got rid of, that don't have a voice anymore. And they will never have a voice unless people like you speak up and commit time to it. So you are literally speaking for the dead, and that is why you have one.
Yeah.
And it's the criteria for getting one. It's different for each person, but you have earned that because of that.
Well, I appreciate that. You should definitely, I always try to pass off all credit as much as I can to Richard Booth, because I really lucked up at getting him my expert. He's phenomenal. But yeah, no, it definitely was for me. It also was like, it was a learning experience, and it also was like an important thing for me. Like, it really was. From the moment I watched that Yiki video, I was like, whoa, like, holy crap. And it already like dragged me in emotionally. And then the more I dug into it, the more I was like, oh my God, there's more. Like, it's like, it's, you're like, oh Jesus, like what, like, and you're every like episode, once you and once you start digging through like the facts, like like I've actually gone to the point where like I'm regularly like just for like, oh yeah, this little thing, like I'm exploring this little angle, and then I'll go over, because like what we plug every episode on that libertarianinstitute.org/OKC, it says OKC archive. It literally is like a Google for it. You can just go to this little search bar, type in, I'll be like, ah, oh, crap, what is, I'll forget like something, because now I've gotten to the point where I'm like regularly going on shows and talking about this. So I'm like, and I'm not the expert, so I have to make sure I stay sharp. I'm like, usually I'm pretty usually well immersed in OKC stuff just to keep it in there, because I'm not the expert. I mean, I've read some books, I've done a series, but it's like everyone wants me coming on and talk about it. I'm like, you know, it's like almost like an expert topic. So for me to do it, I'm like, I almost feel like I got to make sure I'm really doing it good, because I feel like people like almost assume I'm an expert. I always try to really like explicitly be like, I'm not the expert. Like, but
I just play one online.
Well, I don't even try to play one. It's just, I know people assume like, or they'll like be like, oh, you're coming on to talk about this. But it's like, there are a lot of technical details, a lot of stuff. So I want to make sure no one's like, hey, you're the expert. I'm like, I'm trying. I'm working my best to get there. I forgot like what my point was about the expert thing. But yeah, I've been like kind of, fuck, I had a whole point. I lost it. What was I even leaning to? I had a whole point. God damn it.
Oh, it's getting, I talked about getting the lecterns and things like that. You want to be sharp. But
oh, yeah. Oh, damn it. I had a whole point. But yeah, no, I've been doing my best to try to stay on top of that content, you know, keep in mind. Damn it, I had a fucking point, and lost it completely.
I get this. People want me to be an expert on January 6th. I'm supposed to know all of these cases in every detail. And it's like, look, I saw what I saw. I experienced what I experienced then. Honestly, the shit that they put me through, I try not to think about it most days, because if I'm like, I'm writing a book right now, I'm probably 70% done. And I can tell you that in the beginning, writing that book, dude, it really freaking messed with me, because I had to relive those moments, every step, like every word that went on the paper. You know, I started drinking a bunch more, got really depressed and stuff. So I'm through that part now, which is nice. Now I just got to write about prison, which was actually not a bad time. So that should be a lot easier.
Oh, so you're currently working on a book on this? How?
I am.
Do you have any sort of timeline at all? Or are you just kind of it's probably your first book, I'm assuming. So you're probably just very much like, I don't know what I'm doing.
So I'm actually a pretty good writer. It's something that I've always been passionate about. I'm decent at it. Went to college, so I know how to research and cite and all these things. But the book is probably about 230 pages deep so far. And it covers everything from who I am, why I showed up, what happened the day before. Saw Alex Jones speak in the park. You know, I saw Owen Schroyer burn like a BLM flag on the sidewalk. Like, I felt like I was Forrest Gump walking through history, you know?
I mean, you kind of were. It very was Forrest Gumpy. Although there, I guess there's a little bit of a intentionality to it. It's more mischievous than a Forrest Gump. And that's kind of what makes it endearing as well. But I guess we've been pussyfooting around it a little bit. Let's just straight up say what did you do? How do we explain the actions that you took? Cause it's weird. You, to some people, you're almost like this evil figure, but it's like, hard. It was that the thing about you that broke the mold of it is that really it was hard to look at you as an evil figure, or because it was like we had the poster boy or the some of the pictures that came out that they were using as propaganda to be like, look how evil it is. But you were almost like the counter propaganda to where it was like, look at this guy, this is hilarious. And it's like there were some people who were trying to like put it out there to be like, oh my god, look how disrespectful they're being. And it's like it didn't work though, because it was people were like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you were almost like this counter propaganda. So I guess there were like people who did kind of allude to that, like it's almost became this thing in their head of like what you did. Like some people like, you stole the lectern, you did this, yeah, you did that. Like what even happened in relation to lecture? Because it's my understanding it wasn't much, but it was made out to be a lot, and you ended up doing a lot of time for it. So.
Yeah, we can fast forward to that moment. There was stuff leading up to it. We can, you know, circle back, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we can circle back, but like, it's just to set who the hell you are for people, but yeah.
This the lectern was sitting out in the open. So the story surrounding it was that I broke into a room, that I took this thing, and I left the Capitol with it. Someone made an eBay post selling it on eBay. It actually sold for almost $100,000 at the end before the post was taken down. We had Jimmy Kimmel going on his talk show saying that I stole it. Like, so this, the rhetoric is out there that I'm this thief, that I stole, that I broke into an office, took this thing, you know, and flew home with it. Everything surrounding that is a lie. This thing was sitting out in the open under like a staircase. Like there's no vestibule, there's no closed door. It's just sitting out in the open. And I'm in the rotunda and I think to myself, man, that's a great prop for a photo. Like you're in the Capitol and you know, like there's a lectern right there. I'm going to put it to the center of the room. I'll have someone take my picture because we're like, you know, a selfie world these days. You know, I'll put it on my socials and maybe I'll get like 5 more followers. And that's it. I took it out to the middle of the room, about 20 yards. I gave a short speech. There were some photographers that were there. It turns out it was Getty Images. They were taking my pictures. So I smiled and waved because I'm a polite person. I put it in the middle of the room. I gave a speech and I left it there. That was my entire interaction with the piece of furniture. I moved it 20 yards, but I was charged with felony theft because it was supposedly worth over $1,000.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, probably was. I mean, it was a fancy
look. I'm a carpenter.
But yeah. I mean, whether it was really legitimately worth it, but I mean, you know how these items go. They
include a
bit for the. I mean, you can't be having a sub $1,000 lectern, you know, for this speaker, you know.
Well, most furniture that's built for these federal offices are built by prisoners, though. So we're talking about labor costs and supply costs. They were actually debating whether it had historical significance, so it was priceless, which means it's difficult to say it's a felony, or it's not a historical item, so we have to put a number on it. So they chose the latter.
So they got you. So you moved. You said you only moved it like a little bit. So, but they tried to get you for felony theft, even though you technically didn't take it. You just moved it. Yeah.
They like, said it's conversion of use. So it's like if your car was sitting in your driveway and your keys were in it, and I turned it on for a prank and then I parked it like one driveway down, that's technically theft.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you wrote the law like that. So I guess, sure.
Yep. Well, this is where libertarian legal theory comes in, because that becomes nonsensical. Because the whole idea of criminal justice is to, it's all about property rights. So the idea would be if someone stole something from you, the correct path to, you know, become whole again would to be for them to make you whole again. And if, say, it was someone stole $20 from you, it would give you $20 back. And obviously, whatever troubles you went through in the process of having to get, you know, work to get your property back, they would have to cover the whole idea of recompense. So there's like the idea that like you're going to do literal time, which is just punishment for so an item that someone actually got back. Like at best,
but whose property is it? This is the question I always have, because it doesn't belong to any speaker of the house, because it's a revolving position, right? So the speakers don't technically own these things. And so the next step is, well, it belongs to the federal government. Well, who owns the federal government? I always assumed it was the people, that it's all of our taxes that pay for the government. So all of the property the government owns is actually the citizens' property. So how can I steal something that technically belongs to me if we're really being like honest about it?
Yeah, I think at best they might have a case if we had a proper legal world, like a proper legal system in this country. I think at best they may have been able to charge you with like $5-$10 for the amount of time that it took one of their employees to move it back from the one place to the other. And at that point, like, who's really going to go to court for like $5-$10?
Oh, the federal government.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about this lectern is people don't know these things, because the only reason you know about me is because my photo, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't know about this piece of furniture, right? So someone else moved it somewhere else. They found it in the red corridor literally hours later, and they wheeled it out. There was a big ceremony. So someone else also moved it. No one's been charged with moving the furniture but me. On top of this, someone actually stole the microphones off the damn thing. Do you know what he had? He had a fine for it, and he was asked to bring them back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
checks out.
Yeah. I went to prison for 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah. You, yes. Well, I mean, that's because you took a picture.
I didn't take the picture. Someone else took the picture.
I mean, it obviously was just punishment for the appearance that you, like, now had there been no picture, say you had even taken an item or something, a small item like that individual. Yeah. Probably in the same boat. Just, you know, give it back. Small fine.
Yep.
Whatever. Yeah. You mentioned you had some other stuff that you felt you wanted to bring up that led up to it. Feel free to go wherever you want with that. I'm not sure what specifically you're referring to. A lot of stuff happened on January 6th, but we can go wherever you want with that.
Well, so I get this question a lot where, and my judge brought this up, when I first approached the Capitol building, there were people that were, you know, fighting with cops, and cops were fighting with people. Like, we've all seen the videos. And a lot of people like to look at the Tucker Carlson stuff and say, well, no, you know, it was all peaceful. But you have to consider the left has only seen a handful of videos and said this is the only one that happened. And the right is only one set of videos and saying only these things happened. And I try to be as honest as possible. Both things happened. The reality is that both things happened. 95% of the people that were in the building were nonviolent. We weren't doing shits, like we were walking around taking photos. But if you look at the people who have had the harshest sentences, it's the people who were in the building, not outside the building, who were acting crazy. And I'm a nonviolent person. Like, I do jujitsu, so you can argue maybe I do like violence a little bit, but I don't like hurting people, you know? So when I showed up and I saw these things happen, like, you know, happening off the distance, I'm like, well, I'm not a part of that. That's not what I'm here to do. So I left the group that was doing that and walked inside through some open doors, you know, and they want to blanket statement that everyone there was a rioter. Everyone there was a violent, you know, rioter and insurrectionist, all these things. And what I try to do is try to find the middle ground. You know, I try to find the kink in the armor for the left. And I say this, we can talk about BLM for a minute, right? We remember the Summer of Love. We remember, you know, the multiple riots, the 30 plus people that died, like, you know, cops that were, you know, being firebombed and all these things. And I say this, BLM did have a bunch of riots, but it doesn't mean everyone who showed up to a BLM protester is a rioter, right? It means that maybe 5% of the people that were at those riots were rioting. Maybe 10. We don't know, because the feds never investigated meaningfully, right? They didn't ask Google for locations. They didn't ping cell phones. They weren't breaking down people's doors in different states. That's not what happened. We'll never know. But if I can give the same grace to a group of people who showed up to protest, whether I agree with their protest or not, grace enough to say, listen, I'm sure most of you were just there to protest because you feel like you were wronged. And if I want to be an actual person who believes in constitutional rights, you can protest, you can show up to have your voice, you can assemble, then I have to give those people grace. I want to know why we're also not being given grace. And that is my biggest grievance that I have through this.
I mean, I think we know the answer why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's where we get into some of the glowy glow stuff, which I am kind of interested. I guess there's kind of two questions here. Like, what was your rough vibe of kind of deep state stuff, and has your eyes opened more since? Like, what was your perspective before all this in that kind of vein of things, and has it changed since? And also, I'm just kind of curious if that's the kind of what led you to my content, because I'm sure you know now, after going through my OKC playlist, that like that is in my head is kind of like the focal point of like the modern day fuckery when it comes to glowy stuff. It's such a good starting point to kind of web out to like the Whitmer stuff, to like, understanding the PatCon and kind of like, the things like Patriot Front and like, January 6th and how the fucking,
the whistleblower that came out last week saying that they were looking for 11,000 hours worth of video, but they can't give it to him because they implicate too many FBI agents. Yeah. I mean, look, I will say this, two things. One, on the way marching to the Capitol, or the night before, we saw National Guard everywhere, right? They were already there. They're sitting out there with their APCs, and they're hanging out because they've been called to be there. I remember marching to the Capitol, walking, to the Capitol with a group of people.
Goose-stepping to the Capitol?
Yeah, exactly. Always arms outstretched, It's very sore that
very
day.
Very loudly. Yeah.
Exactly. So I remember texting my jiu-jitsu coach, Sonny, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to be using, riot rounds or live ammunition, because we're marching to this place and, I can assume they're going to, be protecting it with all fervence because, it's so sacred or what have you. And that's what I honestly believe to come to. I believe we would show up there. There'd be these lines of people in front of us like, hey, it's the Capitol. Shout all you want. Hold your signs. But you'll get tired. Go get a hot dog. Go home. And it's not what I saw. And I was confused when I approached the building because I saw maybe like 30 cops outside. And my thought is, why? Like, why not more? Inside the building, it took me almost 20 minutes to find the first police officer, right, that was in that building. And the only interaction I had with the cops there that day is I asked a police officer, hey, how do I leave? I don't know where I am. And that body cam footage has still not been released. It should be. It should be, because it would show you my temperament. But as far as when did I start waking up, I think it was through all of this.
Okay.
I think it was, I always believed that, my country has my back. We're all citizens. And I was kind of this mindset where maybe we're not supposed to know everything. Maybe they need their secrets, because if it got leaked, internationally, it would be the end of our country.
Yeah.
And I remember having these conversations when, during the election, in 2020, when we saw, the graphs and things like that, and questions started arousing. And I had a lot of people were saying, like, we just need to arrest these people. It's treason. We need to, consider what we used to do with treasonous and do those things. And I'm like, well, the issue is you start arresting some of these very high people, and then all the dominoes start falling down behind them. And then what you have, yeah, exactly. Well,
that's the idea.
So at the time, I thought I was being the voice of reason, where I was like, well, listen, like, if you start doing that, then the country starts falling apart. Who's going to be in charge of things? Who's going to run things? China can come in, run us all over. And maybe, maybe they're just necessary evil at the top. We don't understand all the working parts of it. That's literally how I believed in 2020, even going through all of things that I thought were man, this is not right. They really are doing things that we have questions for. And instead of having the questions answered, they are arresting people instead. So I go through all of my things. I sat down with the feds for 12, 13 hours across two proffers. Turns out I don't know shit about shit because I'm just a normal dude raising kids. They didn't give me any credit for sitting down doing proffers. They said, well, you couldn't offer us anything, so we're not going to give you any credit for doing that. But we're definitely letting everyone know you talk to us so that way people think, you know, you're a CI or something. And thankfully, they didn't give me credit because when you go to prison, you don't want that credit on your paperwork. They will find out and they are not very friendly to you.
Yeah, I would surmise so, but go on.
Yeah. So after going through this whole process, being grinded up by the system, I got out of prison and my wife picked me up, saw my kids. We had a great, you know, reunion back at the house. And I talked to my wife and I said, listen, I'm at a segue here. I'm an impasse. I can either, you know, shut the fuck up and, you know, get on with living with my family or speak about this. And if I'm going to speak about it, I need to be speaking in truth, like facts. I need to understand exactly who it is I'm going against, who it is I want to talk about. And I think it was at that moment where I was like, I'm going to start listening to history, like not the history that you learn in public schools, but the history that is difficult to find, the history that is talked about behind closed doors. So I've been kind of on a tear just walking backwards, I'm trying to make it back to Jekyll Island at some point. So I'm kind of walking backwards and just trying to understand.
It's wild the way the webs go once you start following them. I really could, like just with OKC, like I don't know, like I already mentioned the Michigan stuff, and it ties into MK Ultra. It ties into, you can bring into COINTELPRO, like it or COINTEL. And it's like, it just is like, and then you can get to weird, like, Fed infiltrating, like, weird religious groups when you get to the outskirts. Sure. And, like, it just gets so nuts. And once you start realizing, like, the way that these shadowy groups maintain control or exert their influence, it's just, like, it's weird. And it makes you reevaluate history and be say something, like, as simple as, say they said that, hey, there was a big white nationalist or white power movement in the 90s. Like, that's a good example. Oklahoma City bombing. And then once you start digging into these and realizing how many, like, even looking at it from a modern day thing, saying how many groups are infiltrated by feds, and then you're like, you assume that might be like a modern day thing. Then you start looking at something like OKC, you realize, oh, they were doing a lot of that same stuff already. You know, like, you don't know how infiltrated it was. But once you start looking, you're like, I see a lot of infiltration. And then you'll see, oh, well, now they've also infiltrated this other thing that also influences this thing. And you're like, how much of this is real? And how much is it just like a distortion of reality to where you're like, and now we just, in the history books, you go, oh yeah, there was a really burgeoning white power movement in the early 90s. And you're like, and it's just a given. And that's just a narrative that builds upon itself. And you're just like, and the damage that causes. And now you get to modern day where we're, politicians will say shit like white supremacist domestic terrorists is our biggest thing we have to worry about. And you're like, who? Yep. Where? What is this thing? And like, then you see things like Patriot Front and you go, they're like, right there. And you're reevaluate history. Like, are they just everyone gotten worse at this? Like, go on.
What is the concept where everyone misremembers it collectively? There's a term for this.
Oh crap.
I would know this an hour ago.
I know. I literally was just listening to a podcast they were talking about the other day. It's like the idea of like the Berenstein or Berenstain.
Yeah. What's sherbet? Sherbet ice cream. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Everyone sherbet says sherbet. It's actually sherbet. There's no andar. It's sherbet. Right. But everyone remembers it to be sherbet. Everyone pronounces sherbet. We collectively remember things the way that I guess that we were told to remember things. And I think that public school might be the center of all of this. Really, really, really do.
Collective consciousness,
It goes back to that. It's not a president for 4 years that's going to save us. It is raising a 30-year generation that understands truth. And I have this also goes back to like, how far do you spider web? I know, like, I have a brand that was kind of thrust upon me, right?
Mandela effect.
Yeah, it hit me. It's Mandela.
Because it's Nelson Mandela. People used to think Nelson Mandela was dead, when in fact he was still alive.
Yeah.
Also, just so people know, Nelson Mandela was actually a giant piece of shit. But go on.
Yeah, we can definitely go into that. So there is this brand that's been kind of thrust upon me, where I'm supposed to be this, you know, I am, but I'm supposed to be this wholesome guy that's just jovial and humorous and things. And I wonder sometimes if I keep rabbit holing, will it make me one of these people that there's this concept in the Bible where it talks about, you know, new believers, you know, they need milk. They can't chew solid foods, like babies, right? Like babies, you need to start them on a very like liquid diet, and then start introducing like things upon things. And I wonder, you know, if I start delving too deeply, right, and start making that my brand, will I lose this group of people that may just be the introduction to this? And it goes to the point that I think that right now that there's this, I think the conservative party is scooping up a lot of libertarians because the Overton window has shifted so much, right? And we've also kind of grown culturally to where we don't really care about things we cared about in the 90s. So conservatives have changed. And I think that there are so many battlefronts that are available for so many levels of people that can either feed you milk that you need, or baby food, or start working on solid foods. We need as many generals on the field as possible. So it's important that we have many different brands of people that are talking about things, but we also need to have a unified collection. Like we're all together promoting this thing. So it's like, look, no, just follow this thing. And then you'll get to the point where you realize that it's not about voting for a party. It's about voting for your rights. It's about voting for your freedom.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
It's a lot. Yeah.
I was following it, and then the voting threw me for a loop. Cause I like immediately, it's like, I was thinking about something else. Then you're like, oh, well, voting. I was like, oh fuck, that threw me off. No. Cause yeah, I was thinking that in terms of like kind of how we go about supporting, you know, people who are saying certain things. It just threw me off when it took to a political. Cause like in my head, I was like, that just kind of happens naturally. Like that, what this effect that happens is like, you know, I generally do my best to try to boost people that I like and that I think do good work. And most of those people tend to do the same. It's like this, like, you know, the rising tide raises all ships. And I'm like, I'm very much like I forget the term for it. It's like the mindset. Like, because a lot of people will be like, say, for example, will be protective. Like, for example, with me, like with my show, like with my OKC stuff, you would think like maybe I would be protective of like Richard Booth, and I wouldn't want to like share him around and be like, hey, you should interview him. But like, if anything, I'm the complete opposite. Like obviously it's cool if I get on a show or something, but like,
sure.
I've many times I've recommended like for certain people, like if you want to talk to him, he will be great. He is a phenomenal. He's a genius when it comes to stuff. And so like the idea being like I'm putting that energy out in the world, and like, I'm not necessarily like waiting to collect it back either, but it just naturally does. Cause it's sure. Like you're kind of creating this network of people just by the simple acts like that and how you interact socially. Like I'm putting forward this guy that's like great on this one topic that I'm interested in. And it kind of builds up this thing, like roughly this topic I'm interested in overall, which obviously I'm involved in that topic. So the growth of that topic in general is good for me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same idea where then like I find other things I'm interested in. I try to boost their voices, and they usually tend to try to do the same for me. It's not this thing anyone that's like said, it's just this. So it's just like, I'm just basically right now, I'm just autistically describing what like socializing is. Like
that, exactly, you know what I mean? Yeah.
like that's all that is. It's just like, hey, you know, maybe just find people you like, and if they're cool and they're good people, support them. And if you're operating with large audiences, I think people start, you know, picking up on that, and then you build up audiences as you go. And like, it's just this natural effect, and then it just kind of becomes like, you see where people like me have an outsized influence to literal, you know, fucking CNN contributors.
But it's we also finally have a space where we can communicate, right?
Yeah.
Like we've been throttled for I don't know, the since the birth of mainstream media, you know, and I think when social media first came out, you look at the 4chan, you look at, you know, Reddit, things like this, like people were talking behind the scenes, promoting ideas. And not that everything on 4chan and Reddit should be taken to heart, especially these days, but it's an opportunity to speak and share ideas. And mm-hmm. I definitely think that I don't know where Twitter is going to go with this new hire. I'm reluctant, but mm-hmm. I'm going to keep talking while I can. You know, yeah. But it's I think it's a space that we can share ideas and connect with people. And I think we need to promote that and support that all the way. When I talked about the voting thing, I didn't mean like, you know, just for, yeah. you know, the presidency. I mean, like locally, if there's a 30-year push, you need to be so consciously aware of your neighbors, of the people you see at the grocery store, your teachers, like the people you barbecue with. These are the people you need to be having conversations with. These are the people you should be feeding milk to. These are the people where it's like, oh, did you see this thing? That's weird, isn't it? Right? And then let, you know, plant a seed, because locally is how you win nationally. And it takes 30 years for that oak to take hold and to grow into something that is the idea that most centrists want, but yeah. It's going to take time.
Yeah, I think, you're in a certain sense locally. It doesn't even necessarily have to be politically, but I guess it works out that way as well. Like, we haven't talked particularly about my politics. I'm not a huge fan of voting in general, but if you're going to do it, the more local, the better.
Yes, yes.
So, like, that's kind of my perspective. So I agree. But I also think, like, it's kind of like just make yourself better as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you have certain ideas, you know, those ideas coming from a better package, you know, whether it be appearance, whether it be your financial situation or
sure.
you know, your social presentation or whatever, those sure. are all, you know, I and that's in a sense is like kind of the hyper local is a sense, because you're like, you know, down to you. I think that's really like mm-hmm. you're saying, that's what matters the most. So like, do your best to make something of yourself. You don't have to necessarily always be, you know, pushing some specific concept, but just the idea, if you're someone that has like, people can look at you and be like, well, they have a beautiful family. They have a nice life. They're doing well. They seem to have their head on straight. And they also have these set of ideas. Mm-hmm. It just kind of, you know, naturally, it just kind of gives it an air of respectability, real respectability, not the fake respectability that we, you know, we are kind of alluding to with this like phenomena of Trump as juxtaposed to the, like the elite or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, people kind of are learning to be able to identify their own, you know, what they in their own, you know, arbitrary way consider respectable or important.
Mandela effect, we consider that these people that we vote in, that we're giving them power. And, you know, I grew up in church, so I use a lot of, you know, scripture and things like that. But it's Moses got to a point to where he couldn't manage the amount of people that are underneath him. So he had to delegate, right? And it's not that we should be voting people into power. That's where we're getting it wrong. We need delegators. At some point, we do need people to delegate things to be done. And they're delegating to the people, right? It's not that we should be giving them power. We should be allowing them to delegate positions down to people that are responsible, the best hires for a job. Because I do believe that a strong community makes a great neighborhood to live in. It makes a great place to raise kids. You do definitely need people that are not in charge, but can delegate well and understand who's the best person for the job. So we got to stop understanding voting as, well, I want this person to be in power. No, that means you're giving up your power. You have to change your mindset on that. We need to vote people who delegate well.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it. I don't want to get sidetracked in a whole, because I could keep going. we could talk about how I prefer a king to a democracy, but.
Well, I tell you what, come over for a brisket with the kids and we'll chat for hours. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we definitely do need to set something up. We need to hang out sometime. I'm a super duper duper busy guy, but every now and then I might be able to figure something out. We were talking about doing some sort of Tower Gang. I guess this is a little bit of a preview for the fans out there. We were talking about doing some sort of Tower Gang something or other in like July or August. So we'll see. And that'd probably be at Top Lobster's house, which is a you know, just like a couple hours from me and you. So, they'll probably be in the future more events at Top Lobster's house. Maybe at some point, maybe I'll start doing them at my place, because I have a decent setup in my place. I have a couple acres. I have a you know, an exterior building that if I tied it up would be a good little party spot. So I don't know. Between the two of us, we definitely can start doing stuff like that. And we got enough people around here. Unless they take Clint from us, because I don't know if you've been hearing with the Tim Pool stuff going on with Clint. How they're talking about it sounds like it's basically a done deal. It seems like that he's going to be doing poker with the boys with Tim Pool, which is like I think it's supposed to be like a poker show. I don't know. We don't even know really the specifics and stuff. But
I was up at the compound a couple of weeks ago. I don't gamble at all. I have vices, but that's one I don't want to take up.
The Tim Pool one you went up there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And God, I don't want to share the story too much.
I mean, if you don't feel comfortable sharing,
I can dance around it. So I'm up there and I'm dropping off some lecterns for some people. Two of his writers, because
was it Bert and who else?
Yeah, it was. I'm not gonna say their names because I'm just.
You know, that's fine. It's Bert,
people,
someone else.
People got them.
Bert said it. Straight up said it on there. No, actually, it was. Crap. No, I think it was the other guy. Crap. I might be mixing, conflating some people. But I don't know. I think the ones you're talking about probably wouldn't care, but whatever. We don't say the name. It doesn't matter. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I brought up four lecterns and I wanted to drop them off the compound because I'm in DC. I don't want to be walking around with them. So I dropped them off and stuff. And I get there and I think it's G Prime and Cashman and. Pool is sitting there and they're playing poker. It's like, oh, lectern guy, you play cards? And I'm like, I don't play poker, you know? And it's because I've got, my family has a, there's one of my people almost ruined his life over the whole thing. So I don't get involved with it. I have an addictive personality. So if I see something I might enjoy, I'm like, not going to do it, you know? And it's just, you know, just being cognizant of my, my disposition.
I play poker a few times. I just suck at it. I don't know. I never really can get. I'm like, okay, I can do it for fun. I also am like, I'm the kind of person that I don't like gambling because it's my autistic brain.
I get anxious.
It's not even an anxious thing. It's just like, I know I'm like, have the cognizance to know like my skill level and be like, why would I just want to lose money? Like statistically, I'm going to lose. And like, maybe if I got really amazing at it, but it's like, I don't think. Like the amount of time I need to put in to get good is really worth it. The amount of money I'm going to make off this. So it's like, I don't know, for me, like the entry level, it's like, I never got into gambling and at all, unless it's something like, say it was some like a thing, like say, I don't know, like I'm a really good soccer player. It was like,
sure.
Although I guess like one-on-ones don't even make sense. But like, say like there was like, you could do one-on-ones with people and you'd be like, but for money. Now that, sure, okay. Now, like, I could be like, I have an idea. I know my skill level. I'm really good at it. I'm
sure.
I know I stand to make some money. But if it's just like shit, like regular normal gambling, like, I just, the idea of gambling, the idea that, like, I know this, the trick here is for me to lose money. Like, I'm not stupid. So I know, like, if there's no money in the line, I can have fun with it and it is a fun time. But, like,
I've seen people lose a lot of stuff and I don't want to, you know. And it's just more about my disposition. There are things I don't want to get involved in. And it's not, I don't care what you do. Like, if that's your thing, dude, have that. It makes you happy. Everyone's got a hobby.
And but I mean, either way, they're going to make it into a show. I mean, I'll probably end up playing it. I mean, maybe I'll end up there at some point. I don't know. I'll just be the idiot who's like just cracking jokes and probably losing really badly.
My wife and I love Vegas. We go there, you know, probably at least once a year. And I watch her gamble. She loves the slot machines, you know, and I just watch her lose a bunch of money and I have a drink and watch her. I have my vice, she has hers. So it's so it works out fine.
Yeah. No, but I forgot the whole reason we even brought that up. Oh, yeah. I'm just saying.
Oh, Clint Tower Gang. Yeah.
Yes. That they're probably likely will be, you know, here in the future, especially as the show grows, might start doing more stuff here in Florida, more get togethers, maybe start getting, audiences involved because surprisingly we've developed because we've done, I think, one or two events now, and we've surprisingly developed a little bit of a local audience, it seems. We've run into a few people. But anyways, I'm rambling now. I don't really – point being is we definitely want to hang out. I think there might be some Tower Gang events in the future. The point I brought up with Clint is they might take our boy away from us, so that might throw it off a little bit. But, we'll figure it out as we go. I mean, there's – but I'm looking forward to the future. I think we've kind of really tackled most of it, unless there's other big stuff you want to hit on. Who else? I do want to know who all else have you given out these lecterns to? Other than, you know, I knew about the couple of Tim Cass writers, and then me, obviously, and you gave Clint one when we met up, just what was it, Saturday, just the other day?
Yeah.
you know, we met up at Dave Smith's thing. And you gave one to what, Josie there? Did you give one to Josie?
Josie got one as well. Yeah.
Okay. So who else?
So the criteria is, it's different per person, right? And again, it's the whole concept where it's like, what are you doing in your space? And are you standing up? I will say the first person that got one was Chrissy Mayer. Do you know who she is?
Yeah, yeah, she's cool.
She's a comedian.
Female comedian, yeah.
She was actually there on January 6th. So yeah. Not, and she came up against a lot of stuff, like a ton of stuff. And she is, she's, I don't know what she is politically, but she's not shied away from it. She has leaned into it, and she'll talk to everyone. She'll talk to you whether you're transgender or gay, or she has porn stars on, but she's at least holding that basic conversation of, you know, can we talk about things were better before, or things can be better than what these parties are offering us? So she's kind of like that introductory, hey, these things need to be talked about. So Chrissy Mayer actually got the first one. One of her partners, Gary from Nerdrotic, also got one, because he's also on that culture war front. He is talking about things that maybe people aren't really heavily involved in politics, you know, but they're kind of getting that spoon-fed information where, you know, holy cow, like, this is happening. I don't like it, right? So he got one. Memers. So some of the very large meme pages, which I think are doing, I think the hardest work that is out there right now that's been
the Lord's
there.
Work, for, yeah.
Yes, the Lord's work, yeah. So let's see who got one. So Liberty Cap got one, or Liberty Cappy got one. Oh my gosh, what is this page? Sorry, there's been a lot so far. I actually have a flashcard with the names written down. Why don't you give me 2 seconds? Let me get it real quick. And
you know what? I do want to comment, though. I just thought it was funny when I was thinking about this. Like a little part, schizo part of my head when I like heard about this, my immediate thought was like, maybe he's a Fed collecting like addresses for all these people. I think I just blew your cover, but whatever.
I ask for PO boxes. I do. I'm like, don't give me your address. Like, find a local UPS store you can pick it up from. I don't.
We met in person, for people who are wondering about that theory. Exactly. You never insisted on my address, my mother's maiden name, anything like that. We nope. Met up somewhere. You handed it to me. It was not at all pushy. Like, where do you live?
Nope. So I typically send them to like UPS stores so you can pick them up. So like, I guess I know like relative location, but I mean, they could be visiting for a week. I don't know. My attorneys got one each, actually. David Bigney and Dan Eckhart.
But it's useful when you pass it up the chain, because they can just conglomerate that information and make it work for them, you know?
Exactly. They can triangulate, I'm sure. Like, yeah.
Well, the Hodge twins, they delivered it to here, so I think he's within this vicinity. All right, but go on.
My attorneys got a lectern each, because the shit they went through representing me, they were getting death threats. People were saying they should have their licenses revoked. And they're like, no, he deserves representation. It's like, it's literally our job, and he has a right to have this. So each one of them got that, Dan Eckhart and Dave Bigney. My jiu-jitsu coach got one, because when we were getting death threats, people were calling to like rape my children and wife while I was gone. I have stacks of letters that were written in. The guy who showed up was my jiu-jitsu coach, Sonny Parlin, and he came here, body armor, you know, AR-15, moved my family, took care of them. Like, that dude showed up. Like, he definitely earned one. Mm-hmm. And God, who else is there? Luke Rakowski got one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, he definitely deserves one. That guy is super based, you know, zero fucks.
Yeah, I've never really interacted with him. It wasn't there when I was there at Tim. I don't know. At some point I will, you know, but yeah, he's a cool guy. I've never really, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I've definitely had texts disagree with him, but he always seemed like relatively all right, I guess.
it's not based on whether I agree with you.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah.
It's yeah. How much figurative damage are you doing to the narrative? Are you working to dismantle the system that is keeping us in captivity? And based on your level of interaction and understanding, if you are meeting that criteria, you're going to get one. And I can tell you that the next 10 that I built are not going to people that have massive followings, that have, you know, these large accolades. They're people who have actually sacrificed their freedom. People who have been to prison, people who should not have been in prison, people who were wrongfully arrested, accused of things they did not do. The next 10 go to them.
Ooh, I think I have a good rabbit hole for you, and that might okay. actually be a name on there.
Send it.
I'll let the audience. It's a little bit of a teaser, an upcoming episode. Next week, I'll be recording with Ken Silva, who I've had on a few times, a journalist. We're going to be talking about the death of Gordon Call, who, if you don't know if that name rings a bell to you, he was kind of one of the OGs. Some people might even debate that he's kind of what kicked off the Patriot movement, that kind of like is what led to like kind of sort of the, you know, that's when we talk about Patriot movement, a lot of times we're talking about like the roughly around the time around OKC, where there was a huge big,
not the Patriot Front.
No, not the Patriot Front, but like kind of like a militia freedom kind of movement. Like Gordon Call was a big tax protester, and he ended up getting killed, basically murdered by the federal government over it. And there's still people that, you know, I'm not going to attempt to try to, you know, break down the whole story because it's kind of a long story. But, you know, his son, I think, is still in prison, Yuri Call.
Oh, my God.
And he because there was like a whole thing. There was like a shootout with like police, and like Yuri was there with his dad, and they like hemmed these people up. I'll have to send you the documentary because it's very please. Interesting. And Yuri's still in prison, and it's like he was supposed to have already gone out. But it's a good one. That'll be a lot of people be interested in that episode that we'll talk about next week. I don't know if that'll be if we'll do it all in one episode or not, because there's a lot to it. But it's an interesting story. I just came upon it myself from Ken. So,
but prison release is interesting. So they have FSA credits, which is if you do like programming and stuff, you get reduction on your time, right? But there's like a cap on it. And then I can tell you, people in prison loved Trump. Holy cow. Like whether they were Democrat or conservative, because he put in this COVID act where basically if you were arrested for a nonviolent crime, you can have a 50% reduction if you meet a list of criteria, right? So if you have like high blood pressure or whatever. So he was basically emptying the prisons of people who should not have been in prison, right? Like nonviolent drug crimes or, you know, fraud. Like, look, they paid their fine and they've been in for 2 or 3 years. That is certainly enough. And whether we should arrest people for drugs or not, that's a different story. I think no. If it's just specifically drugs, someone caught you, you know, doing drugs or something, why are you in prison for that? Like you need rehab or something. Like it's not prison you need, because all it does is break up families.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. I've done a lot of talks on like the proper legal theory. The problem is our legal theory is based on like a punitive system as opposed to like recompense, or what, I don't know what the correct word I'm looking for, but the idea of like it's essentially a legal a justice system based on like property rights, as opposed to, because this is where a lot of people get confused, because with our constitutional rights or what rights are. And at the end of the day, if you really understand rights, they all come back to, like, at least the most consistent conception of rights is comes down to property rights. Because, like, for example, you don't have, like, the freedom of speech is just us explaining the idea that, like, roughly you're usually able to speak. Now, like, now when people say freedom of speech, you're usually referring to the Bill of Rights, where that concept is supposed to be that, like, this is applying to essentially areas within the state's power. But that doesn't mean, like, say freedom of speech, that doesn't mean I can go to your house and say whatever I want, because property. And the idea with like public property is like, okay, well, this is like kind of what falls under the Bill of Rights. Like, this is like government stuff. So this is like what governs the government. So people get confused when they talk about freedom of speech. What it comes down to is like, where are you able to do things? Like, are you in the right to do something? Like, I'm kind of like rambling, but
no,
like, there is no freedom of speech. The idea is like, you own yourself, and as such, you command yourself. But now, like, and you own yourself. Now, like, if you go to someone else's place, like where they own, you have the right to kick me out. So technically, I don't have a freedom of speech in that area. if that makes sense.
Sure.
But now, like a public area, like government land, that is governed by the Bill of Rights. If that makes sense. So the idea then becomes, I have freedom. Like people get confused as like what freedom of speech is. This is why this is why I hate shit like human rights, trans rights, black rights. And even it kind of applies to constitutional rights or depending on how you understand them. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to property rights. And even then there's a deeper discussion to be had there. But, you know, you get a little meta past that.
I want to pick your brain for a second. Mm-hmm. So none of us actually own property. We actually rent property from the government because taxes are forever on property. We're all renters.
I'm an anarchist. I'll go ahead and bubble burst your bubble there. But
yeah, no. But
I'm an anarcho-capitalist, so I don't think they have a proper property claim. Like they own it in the sense of like I'm the one with a gun and I will stop you from getting it back.
Yes,
but they don't morally, in the moral sense, they don't rightfully own it. Mm-hmm. They don't have a proper legal claim or
agreed.
Legal or proper
agreed.
So
I think you'll. So this is where I'm at. So if just accept for a moment that we are all renting property, right? But you also want to maintain the right to, I can do what I want on my property. Even though I'm renting it, it's still technically my property.
Yeah.
That should also extend to your business, right? That you're renting from a landlord in a strip plaza, right? It should extend to your vehicle. And I think at least at some point to some bubble that surrounds you, maybe within 20 feet or something, right?
Maybe it depends.
Maybe,
that's what you're talking about, I guess. But yeah,
so making cakes for weddings. Let's say you're renting a property. Where do you land on that?
Oh, I think you shouldn't be made to do anything. Like I honestly am of the opinion if you have a business and you want to say I don't serve blacks or whatever, you should be legally allowed to. I think it's a really stupid business plan. but I don't think you're gonna do really well unless you're in a very homogenous area and it's like a thing that no one even really noticed because there aren't any black dudes around,
and there's also social consequence to doing that as well, so you deal with things on many levels. And I guess that's where I'm at, where I don't think the government needs to come in and have all of these adjustments in regular living. I think that we just, maybe there's social consequence for being an asshole and the world kind of corrects itself, so don't be an asshole.
I mean, obviously if someone's like hurting people essentially mm-hmm. impeding on people's property, whether that be their own physical body, which is their property or their, mm-hmm. their items. Unless it's that, it's like, what am I supposed to do?
They're being the asshole. So have at it. It's a full circle. You also maintain the right to be an asshole yourself.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we droned off a little bit there. Let's go ahead and get out of here. We'll definitely have to do something again at some point. I could definitely talk to you some more. But I got to get to bed. I got some stuff I got to do too before I hit the bed. But what are you working on these days? Where can people find you? Do you have anything to plug? I know you're working your book, you gave your Twitter account, but I don't know if you have any other stuff you're doing right now.
That's it. I'm on Twitter at Lectern Leader. I'm the Lectern guy. Have a lot of fun, lots of satire. Can't make any money right now, so don't send me anything. Don't offer me anything because I can't take it. Federal government still says 3.5 years till I can do anything with that. But
send me money and then I'll give it to him.
That guy.
I'm just admitting to federal, illegal federal money laundering right here on the stream. Just kidding. give me money. That's just a trick to give you to give me money.
give me. Yeah.
But go on. Sorry to make you.
No, you're good. Basically, all I'm doing these days is just trying to bring some awareness to a couple of things. Again, I'm new to the game. I'm not an expert in anything other than wanting to learn. So if you want to come on my journey and learn with me and just kind of figure out what's going on in the world and how we got here, come with me growing up. It'll be a good time.
Hell yeah. Well, it's been cool getting to know you. Really appreciate the little award you gave me. It's really surreal, weird the world we live in. But if people want to check out more of my show, this is a No Way Jose show. You can find me on YouTube, All Major Audio Podcasters, Odyssey as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Tower Gang Jose. I'm on Facebook as well if you want to follow me there. If you want to give me money, patreon.com/SnowyJose2020. Like, share, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. Appreciate you coming here, Adam, and then all you guys following. Yeah. Thanks, everyone. And we are out.